Jesus summoned his disciples and said to them, "Know that those who are recognized as rulers over the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones make their authority over them felt." Does this sound familiar? To bring this statement fully into the 21st century, we would need to change only one word. The Greek word translated as Gentiles means that multitude of people who are not Jewish and who are thereby pagans. In the spirit of our East Coast superiority, we might not want to call modern-day Gentiles pagans. But we can certainly identify a cohort of people who, despite any claims to religious belief, seem to live an entirely secular existence, with no thought of God nor any transcendent being. They espouse no transcendent narrative nor transcendent moral values, but they are rather a cohort that seeks its own position of social prestige and political or financial power. By contrast, the Jewish people of Jesus' time and Christian people since Jesus' time assert a belief in a transcendent God, a meta-narrative of being God's people living in this creation, and a moral code that honors the individual as created in God's image. Even better, this moral code asks us as individuals to live as one, embracing those of the same belief, especially the poorest, the widow, the orphan, and the stranger in our midst. Then this moral code asks us to reach beyond our group for the greater good, to be what the prophet Isaiah calls a light to the nations. As if this were different enough from the pagan way of living, Jesus in the Gospel and Isaiah in the first reading pose an honorable and necessary mode of life, the exact opposite of the pagan search for self-fulfillment, namely that of a servant leader who is also the suffering servant. In our Gospel today, Jesus harkens back to the prophecies of Isaiah in what were called the four servant songs. What we heard today is the latter part of the fourth servant song. We hear the earlier part of this same song in Holy Week. He was despised and rejected by others, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief, and as one from whom others hide their faces. He was despised, and we held him of no account. And yet Isaiah goes on to say, "Surely he has borne our infirmities and carried our diseases. He was wounded for our transgressions, crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the punishment that made us whole, and by his bruises we are healed." We know from Scripture that Jesus knew the Jewish Scriptures well. Assisted by the wisdom and mature spiritual guidance of his mother Mary, during the years before his public ministry, Jesus came to realize that he was the suffering servant of whom Isaiah had prophesied 500 years earlier. He was both the long-awaited Messiah who would fulfill all that God had called Israel to be, and be the one by whose suffering and death, all suffering and death, would gain meaning and hope. We are gathered here today to celebrate the promise of hope that is fulfilled in Jesus' broken body, his spilled blood. It is the hope that his suffering, death, and resurrection embrace our suffering, giving our suffering meaning and significance, and leading us forward through death and resurrection into renewed life. We then, in turn, are the fulfillment of Jesus' life and death in our own lives in this world. We are the light of the nations, the sign of hope, the word of compassion and justice in the midst of our own suffering, has made it so. How has this reality become real in your life or in mine? All of us have probably made sacrifices for other people, and we know people who have sacrificed themselves for us, our time, our energy, our money, perhaps even our hopes and dreams. What is new in these readings is not the message of self-sacrifice, which we've probably heard before. What is new, in different ways, for different ones of us, is a yet deeper realization of our own call to self-sacrifice as part of Jesus' sacrifice. What may be new for us in this deeper realization is that as followers of Jesus, he led the way. Perhaps Jesus inspired your willingness to offer personal sacrifice, and so you know its redemptive value. Or perhaps you did not realize this connection between his sacrifice and yours. But now you can see to your benefit and to someone else's that there is such a connection. Or perhaps you rejected the reality of self-sacrifice and are now living with the consequences of that decision. Or perhaps someone sacrificed something for you, sacrificed themselves for you, and you may not have experienced the depth of their sacrifice. In all these cases, the story is the same. Jesus invites us to offer ourselves to others' needs for their benefit, and we receive from him his love for our benefit. Here are two stories that are really one story that express this reciprocal relationship between giving love and receiving love. Between the time I was a Peace Corps volunteer and the time I arrived in Washington to become a Foreign Service officer, I was in a graduate program at Cornell. I would visit my parents in New Jersey, and on some visits I'd need to do my laundry. One such time, I took my laundry to the basement, put it in the washer, and left the house to do some errands. When I returned, I found my laundry dried, folded, and my shirts ironed by my mother, of course. When I told her that I had planned to finish the laundry myself, she replied, "Well, it's the only thing I can do for you now." She had shown me love throughout my life. And now, in this simple way, she offered me love again, and I received the love. But how could I return? Several years later, my mother developed bone cancer. By now, I was in Washington, in the Foreign Service, preparing to go to Indonesia. On one visit to my parents in New Jersey, I arrived late in the evening, when my mother was already asleep. The next morning, when my father and I were in the kitchen, he told me that she was too weak to sit in her chair, would sit up in bed, and that she needed to be fed. Then he asked if I would feed her the soft boiled eggs he was preparing. I said, "Yes, of course." But a short while later, as I sat on the edge of my mother's bed feeding her, I was shocked at how our lives had changed. Here was I, the grown son, feeding my own mother, who had given birth to me and fed me, along with all the rest that she and my father had done for me. Self-sacrifice takes many forms, from the small, seemingly insignificant day-to-day things, like my mother doing my laundry, or to the overwhelming things, like my father caring for my mother as she was dying of bone cancer. And, indeed, to the renewal of our church. Our episcopacy has acted more like James and John than Jesus. Our hope in the present day is that Jesus' love and our constancy and our effort can lead us through the dark valley of suffering in union with those who have suffered to a renewed church, while the state and national attorneys general bring in cleansing justice. Our readings today and our celebration of this Eucharist invite you and me to enter into this extraordinary mystery of the generous, trusting, faith-filled self-sacrifice undertaken in love, offering new love for the world, while we, the givers of the love, receive love as well from Jesus himself. Our self-sacrifice in the immediate moment for those we know, or over the longer term for the greater challenges of life and for the greater good, bring its own suffering. We then ask Jesus to share his deeper love with us, to sustain us and to lift us up. But then we need to allow that love to hold and to envelop our own suffering, and so give our suffering meaning. Suffering gains meaning when we realize that our suffering brings new hope and new peace into the world. Jesus leads us through the valley of the shadow of death to this deeper love and this new way of living. We must not underestimate how difficult this process is. Look at the Mary in Michelangelo's Pietà, or Mary, Our Lady of Sorrows, or read the suffering servant songs in Isaiah. Our second reading reminds us that we have a high priest who sympathizes with us in our weakness and our suffering, because he too has been tested by self-seeking human beings. The writer continues by encouraging us to approach the throne of grace with confidence, to find help in time of need. Jesus asks us to be the conduits of his love and of his justice. We may grieve like Mary the Pietà, and we can act like the people of God Jesus has created us to be. In all cases, he invites us to trust that his love is never ending, and that our own sacrifice, our own self-sacrifice, has power and significance in what we can see and beyond what we can know. Thank you.